little is more romantic than a shipwreck. Unless, of course, you're on that ship. There are upwards of 30,000 shipwrecks lining the coastline of Great Britain. And according to a new book, The Wreckers, plundering ships was a way of life for inhabitants of Britain's coastlines. The book begins with a passage from a novel by Robert Louis Stevenson, in which a becalmed ship nervously drifts towards what the captain had hoped would be a safe harbor, a fishing village. Door after door was opened, and in the gray light of the morning, fisher after fisher was seen to come forth, yawning and stretching himself, nightcap on head. Fisher after fisher, I wrote, and my pen tripped, for it should rather stand wrecker after wrecker. There was no emotion, no animation, it scarce seemed any interest. Not a hand was raised, but all callously awaited the harvest of the sea. Bella Bathurst is the author of The Wreckers, a story of killing seas and plundered shipwrecks. And she says those people waiting callously on shore sprang to life when it came time to bring in the sea's harvest.
It's worth remembering that although it was what they were doing was going out to rob the ships, it took extraordinary skill to go out in the middle of a gale without lights, probably in darkness and in rain and hail and all the rest of it, to a stricken ship. Whether or not they were going to rob it, it was was almost irrelevant. They had to know the local sea area unbelievably well to be able to kind of cope with that sort of thing. And the British lifeboat service was originated in part from the wreckers who were going out to stricken ships. And because originally there was no incentive to save life, the wreckers would go out and nick what they could and leave the bodies.
That was a real surprise to me, reading this, that the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, one of the most, worthy, respectable charities in the United Kingdom, had this history of emanating from, you know, a very suspicious place.
I think so, yes. I mean, it sort of makes sense. It does make sense in that, as I say, in order to be a lifeboatman, you need, or you certainly needed in the past, an enormous kind of skill, and you really needed courage as well, and the ability to sort of pull together as a sort of community. And those were both, they were qualities that were essential prerequisites for a wrecker as much as they were necessary for a lifeboatman.
Although you do have a couple of grim details in here about bodies washing up and ears being bitten off to retrieve earrings.
That was a very bizarre one. There was a royal commission set up to work out whether to establish a local constabulary in the country. And one of the this was given as kind of evidence in a court of law by somebody that he had seen that there'd been a ship washed up near Hoylake, I think, near Liverpool. And one of the wreckers had bitten the ears off a corpse on the beach to get at her earrings. And the more you kind of look at that fact, the more you just think that is not sort of grotesque, it's kind of bizarre, because you just, well, why didn't he just take them out?
But you also have delicious descriptions of people hiding this stuff all over the place, hiding grand pianos, hiding casks of whiskey, caverns and pits dug in fields. I mean, people became very adept at secreting this stuff away.
They were very adept, and somewhere like Stroma, which is a flat, treeless island and looks, when you see it from the mainland, absolutely naked, is a fascinating case in point, because you kind of think, you know, if you hung your washing out, everybody from here to New York would be able to see the colour of your shirts. But actually that wasn't the case. They were brilliant at hiding things, because they were often raided by the customs and the receivers of wreck and the police. And the only place where they never kept wreck was in their own homes. They had hiding place under the font in the church. They had hiding places in the fields. They had a very elaborate system for hiding big pieces of wreck underwater. The only marker of these pieces of wreck was a little cork floating on top.
Bella Bathurst, in a lot of the places that you visited, people tried to sort of downplay how atrocious some of the attitudes may have been, if you look at it by, you know, modern considerations. And that takes place in Cornwall, too. People say, oh, nothing ever happened here. But we know from Daphne du Maurier and Jamaica Inn that really those people in Cornwall were hideous, lethal wreckers.
The Cornish, in one sense, are maligned in that they get very cross when they're accused of being wreckers. They say that they weren't wreckers. Of course they were wreckers. The only thing is that they were not alone. I mean, the rest of the country was at it just as much as they were, as craftily as the Cornish were, and as frequently as the Cornish. So the Cornish get a rough deal in some senses, but it's difficult to have too much sympathy with them, given that they... They now have a flourishing tourist industry based on their wrecking past as well.
Yes, I think you say they're willing to sell you the idea and deny it at the same time. But you have letters here from local clergy at the time trying to stop this, or constables who were too frightened to enforce it because people would literally leave a meeting and go out with pickaxes and wreck, or even, I guess, in Cornwall, you know, light false lights, right?
Very straightforward wrecking, as in a ship lands on the rocks and you just go down and plunder it, was something of a kind of national pastime, not just in Cornwall but in other parts of the country. The more complicated allegations, like the idea of putting out false lights to lure a ship onto the rocks, it's much, much more difficult to substantiate that, and I never managed it, and it's worth saying that. Certainly that was the most active sort of wrecking, but there is an element of... It's too good to be total myth, but I'm not sure that the wilder kind of flights of Daphne du Maurier's imagination and everybody else's imagination, it actually came to pass in that way.
There's a wonderful job title that I guess still exists in the British government, and I'm not sure it needs to be employed quite as much, the receiver of wreck. Does wrecking still go on today?
Absolutely. It goes on in a slightly more prosaic form, in that a lot of it has gone underwater because of the improvements in dive technology. People can plunder shipwrecks underwater. I mean, I don't want to malign the whole of the dive community, but I believe that a lot of plundering does go on still of wrecks. So that's what's happened to a lot of wrecking. But still, I mean, if there was a ship on the rocks in the Pentland Firth tonight, I dare say there would still be kind of people out and interested.
Bella Bathurst is the author of The Wreckers, a story of killing seas and plundered shipwrecks from the 18th century to the present day. Bella Bathurst, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
You can read an excerpt from The Wreckers at our website, npr.org.